Chapter 12. To Be a Hero. Looking over at him, frozen by the station coffee machine in the last few minutes of indecision, Naomasa had to think. Of all the surrealist qualities that long-ago Knight had taken on in his mind, the weirdest thing about the Triumvirate bust was how Norma Form Suspect 14 just fell asleep in the station's hold tank after decking Nakamura for the sake of some sunglasses. He'd fallen asleep sitting up, out like a light with his jacket over his eyes, while the rest of his mates were scuffling nervously and kicking at the bars and being vile and cagey and yelling that they'd done nothing wrong, that they couldn't be held for something like this. Naomasa knew the infamous guilt sleep that followed confessions intimately, but this wasn't it. If only they'd been so lucky. He was just asleep. It seemed an impossibly cool bit of behavior for someone facing such intense criminal charges. Even if it turned out the thugs were right and they would be back on the streets in under 2 hours. But, looking back, maybe it was a relief for Aizawa Shota to finally be captured. Because if just for a moment, after so long in the lion's den, he was in a place he knew was safe, so he was able to let go and finally rest. "Excuse me, Eraserhead?" Aizawa turned at his working moniker, but only enough to look the approaching detective up and down. The underground hero was dressed in a worn black jumpsuit, as tall as Naomasa himself, but slouching slightly, with his capture weapon piled atop his shoulders and a clipboard in his hands. Those sharp, dark eyes from the mugshot clicked instantly, despite the tangle of black hair framing Aizawa's unshaven face, narrowed somewhere between wariness and impatience. He was still catching up on that elusive rest, if the bruise-like circles under his eyes were any indication. Crossing the scuffed station floor, Naomasa smiled and offered his hand out of little more than rote politeness, or maybe to buy time as he figured out what to do with this strange, scruffy man staring at him like he was a bug on a windshield. "Yes," Aizawa said curtly, when the other man came to a stop, glancing down at the offered hand. The smile crumbled on Naomasa's face, warping into a grimace under the pressure of the hero's unrelenting gaze. He dropped his hand. Did he stare at his students like that? Homeroom at UA probably wasn't a very boisterous place with him at the helm. Naomasa had very fond memories of pranking and general well-natured disobedience in his own homeroom, but that was clearly not in the cards for Eraserhead's class. And this was the man Toshinori was teaching alongside? Naomasa began brightly, having no idea where he hoped to end up. If he had any illusions about even mentioning the hero's work undercover, they were thoroughly vaporized now. Best stick to street-worthy subjects and avoid the incident at USJ, too, just to be careful. Naomasa cleared his throat, absently straightening his tie like it would order his thoughts. I've seen you around the station during night shift, but I've never gotten a chance to introduce myself. I'm Takauchi Naomasa."
"You're the lead detective in the court crimes division,"
Eraserhead responded without missing a beat, little more than a mumble behind the coils of his capture weapon. He resumed scratching away at the clipboard.
"It would be in your best interest if I got these forms filed quickly, then."
Naomasa blinked. How did someone manage to excuse themselves from a conversation so quickly? Within a sentence? Eraserhead elevated efficiency to a level of brutality, precise as the captures he executed and left for Naomasa's crew to wrap up in the early hours of the morning before shift end.
I'll leave you to your filing, by all means,"
Naomasa said as pleasantly as he could, drawing honestly on his never-ending desire for less paperwork mishaps.
"I just wanted to say, I've seen you in the rosters on my beat for years now, and always appreciate your clean work, but I don't think I connected the face to the name. Also, I didn't know we shared a mutual acquaintance."
"Not surprising, considering our poor choice in careers."
And that was it.
Eraserhead simply shuffled through his papers with lidded eyes as if he didn't exist, effectively shutting down the exchange into silence once again. Now Masa's mouth thinned, pricked with rare frustration. No room for subtlety here. It's less our poor choices and more a recent vocational change for a friend of ours, he said lightly, holstering his hands in the pockets of his trench coat and pausing just for effect. I'm not sure how much contact the two of you get at UA, but you'll be pleased to hear that All Might speaks well of you. That got him a look, a sharp look, then more scribbling. It's a habit of his, regardless of the person in question. Dismissed again. So now Masa pushed a little further and dug in, now that he was sure this man would give him absolutely nothing unprompted. This conversation was going to happen. You're right, I guess. He is unerringly positive, like it's his job. Beyond all his other jobs, I mean. And I don't think I could list them if I tried. It's difficult, really, being friends with someone like him. He mused in low tones, trying to sound especially meaningful, since he was well informed on the basic nature of their relationship. Maybe tempt Eraserhead into some eye contact. There's a lot to consider. Worthwhile things are often difficult. Eraserhead finally turned to face him, and now Masa instantly regretted his wish. Do you have something you'd like to say? Aside from what he was already saying? Now Masa's brow furrowed and he opened his mouth, but didn't get a chance to speak before Eraserhead cut him off again, in his deep, perpetually bored voice. As much as I'm enjoying your dominance display, I'd like to leave as little as possible to subtext concerning a coworker as public as All Might. Anything else is irresponsible. So please speak plainly so that we can get on with our night. What? Oh, I'm... Now Masa found himself smiling again through sheer confusion. What? A few thoughts passed the whited-out screen of the detective's mind, scrambled as it was by the alarmed static. What are you implying, when a moment ago you were being so difficult? What can I say to such a thing? We're in the same line of business. I'm not a reporter pressing you for off-color details, and I'm not trying to be dominant. Or maybe he was. Was he? Maybe his entire approach was coming off as overbearing, with as little as he'd seen Toshinori lately, and how strangely protective he had become of the older hero, who most would think could take care of himself. Therein lay the problem. The opposite was brutally true. And that was why there was so much to say, while the vast majority of it simply couldn't be spoken aloud. Because of who they were talking about. Because of everything Toshinori had to hide. Which was everything he had trusted them with. The weight of his care and responsibility abruptly blocked Naomasa's throat, his chest tightening. Staring down the only other friend, contact, companion, co-teacher he'd known Toshinori to have. Where did he start? Aizawa-san, he wanted to say. Toshinori respects you so much, and he has two paths in front of him. Which are you leading him down? Are you helping him retire early or letting him die early? Do I need to tell you how often he skips meals? Do I need to tell you how thin the veneer on his bravado is? How delicate his skin? I don't know you, but do I need to plead with you to help me help him stop throwing himself into the fire? All of the questions and concerns and urgency swarmed the young detective. The intensity of his worry previously hidden under work stress and a dozen other things. And now Masa barely stopped himself before it boiled over. Here he was, expecting to get through an entirely forced conversation with a stranger on subtext alone, when he really had so many things to say. The detective gave a crooked, overwhelmed smile and recalibrated as best he could, starting over. I'm sorry if I broadcasted anything strange, Eraserhead, he said with a faint chuckle, shaking his head. He sighed. It's been a long night. I hope you'll understand. I was just going to say, I've acted as All Might's police contact for the past 5 years, so we've gotten to know each other relatively well. He took a moment to gesture at the Midtown station, which was bustling around them even at 3 a.m. I've seen him day in and day out, through crisis and quiet, and, well, I'm sure it won't surprise you that even the number one hero has bad days. Now that I'm seeing less of him because he's teaching at UA, I wonder about him. As a friend and co-worker, it seems ridiculous to worry about someone like him, but I do. A quick glance confirmed. Eraserhead was watching him now, listening. He made sure to make it worthwhile. Now Masa drew a heavy breath, palming the back of his neck, and glancing around at the scattered night shift staff, running between desks and stooped over files. The stressed halogens flickered above them, whining ever so slightly above the murmured conversation, swilling around the large room. Life isn't just strength or hero work, and even when it is, well, it's complicated. Now Masa continued quietly, holding the underground hero's gaze with all the earnestness he could muster. And if you'll let me speak plainly, I hope that you're the kind of person to see why I worry about him. There was an answering pause, but not too long. Now Masa could see the other man thinking, noticeably for the first time, not rushing to answer or shrug him off in favor of a speedy exit. All Might attracts high-caliber people in my limited experience, Eraserhead mumbled at last. I may not rank so high, but I do my part among UA staff to keep him away from deep gorges and open flames and stupid situations that could interfere with his new responsibilities, if that's what your question is. Now Masa was staring without restraint, caught on what could have been a sideways compliment, when Eraserhead continued in that perfectly bored tone, flipping his completed paperwork off the clipboard and folding it with deft, scarred hands. At UA, we protect our own as much as circumstances allow, and our staff is aware of All Might and in what forms he may need assistance. With that, Eraserhead stared back, blinking slowly at him, waiting for him to get it. So much for subtext. He did know. They all knew and were accounting for it. Now Masa almost deflated with relief, suspended only by the other man's clever wordplay, dense and indecipherable to anyone who didn't know that the towering, skeletal Yagi Toshinori and Japan's shining hero were one and the same, and struggling between mouthfuls of blood to bridge the gap between them. Appreciation, refreshing and sharp, split Naomasa's tight chest. Maybe UA was the place for Toshinori after all. Is there anything else you need, Detective? Two co-workers of mine may be filling in for me in the near future, so I was just dropping by to fill out the necessary permissions. Eraserhead said with a wave of the folded document. Easy and routine, like they hadn't just had a conversation around protecting the symbol of peace. Someone who could never be seen as needing protection in the eye of the public. Battered as he was by the unexpected turn of conversation, Naomasa couldn't help but laugh, the sound bubbling up and out of him in a clash of relief and off-kilter amusement. He waved his hands, taking a step back. Carry on, by all means. Anytime I see your name on the roster, I feel safer knowing you're on duty, Eraser-san. I suppose that goes double now. Thank you, the detective said with a bow of his head. His spirits felt considerably buoyed, more than enough to smile over his shoulder and tip his hat as he finished. For protecting the peace, that is. And so, with his own little bit of wordplay, he left Eraserhead to the quicksand of bureaucracy, thoroughly exhausted, but glad he'd had the time and audacity to push through such a strange exchange with such a strange man. The knowledge that Toshinori was being watched out for at his new job took an immense pressure off the detective's chest, even as it made him think about the gloomy, exacting Eraserhead and what part the other hero played in that. Despite the little glimmer of humanity at the end, Naomasa had to think, this man was Toshinori's new friend? Toshinori, bumbling, overeager, crushingly sensitive Toshinori, was close with this stubborn, chilly man with a penchant for spicy food. This, according to Naomasa's quirk, relentlessly truthful man. Toshinori had a strained relationship with truth on a good day. He couldn't imagine what they got up to with as alternatively talkative and shy as his friend was. Did they just stare at each other? Or was Toshinori's desperation for connections driving him to make odd friends? Hey. Naomasa turned back when he heard that voice again, jolted out of his rambling thoughts as Eraserhead walked up and drew even with him. He froze, waiting, but by no means ready, as the underground hero seemed to intently scan his face with those tired eyes for a split second, before tilting his head, sighing deeply. Sorry, the hero mumbled, looking in askance when Naomasa just stared back. About your friend's nose. And with that, Aizawa Shota was gone, trudging away and out of the station door with one hand dug into his dark tangle of hair. Naomasa didn't move for a few seconds, thoroughly stuck in place for the second time that night as his world was moderately rocked. The night of the bust clicked into place again, dizzyingly relevant, and after a second, the detective looked down, but put a hand to his chin, wondering. It had been a pretty good hit that night, just short of swiping his coworker's nose clean off his face, if he remembered correctly. Luckily, Nakamura had another to spare, so it wasn't so bad. Maybe that's why Eraser chose him, his odd brand of consideration, as it were. Naomasa smiled suddenly, and made his way back to work, finding himself whistling as he settled down to his desk and his files and another sunrise retreat home, with a feeling of considerable accomplishment. As he told Toshinori, friends were always good. This one might be better than most, unexpected as Eraserhead was. And that was saying something for a man who deserved the absolute best in life. Getting up early was a lifelong habit of Toshinori's, and always would be, despite his turbulent relationship with sleep. Recently, he roused himself extra early to accompany Aizawa and Shinzo at the track, but that morning still found him walking the campus green before sunrise, breathing deeply of the chill air and enjoying the quiet of his old schoolyard before it filled with shrieking, yammering heroes in training. Such easy, introspective wandering was a welcome change from the beginning of the school year, when the veteran hero would wake up again and again in the small hours of the morning and hectically flip through his lecture notes as he paced his apartment, lethally disordering them in the process. It was better now. Many things were better now, and so, whether it was his meager but growing experience with teaching, or another kind of relaxation, Toshinori found himself perfectly happy to spend his morning seated on a woven mat in dew-laden grass, with yet another teaching book on his knee. He had taken the time to stretch that morning, too, so he eased his long legs as close to the ground as he could, knees still a little tight from his unexpected sparring session with Aizawa the other day. He was very busy thinking about that, all of it, and hiding a tiny grin in his hand as a result, when a shadow fell over him. Toshinori looked up, knowing it had to be one of three people even before he saw the flyaway hair framed against the diffuse yellow glow of the cloudy morning. He closed his book. Hey, Ayagi-san. Good morning, young Shinzo. No training today? Toshinori asked as brightly as he could, despite, or perhaps because of, the boy's dour expression and downturned face. One job of a hero was to smile when others couldn't, right? Shinzo kicked the wet grass, but did so away from his mat, heaving a guttural, dramatic sigh that bent his whole body. I gotta take breaks, he muttered, crossing his arms. One of them was bandaged rather extensively, and two of his fingers were splinted. I guess. Aizawa-sensei knows what he's doing, I'm sure, Toshinori said mildly. Then, as the child continued to stand, staring forlornly at his wet sneakers, and the bits of grass smeared across them and rubbing his toes against the ground only to accumulate more, Toshinori patted the woven mat next to him. First bell is still a while off. Would you care to sit? Yeah, sorta. I'm just... Shinzo shook his head and, looking in askance, yanked fitfully at the strap to his tattered backpack. He sighed again, but far more quietly. Yagi-san, could you maybe help me with my homework? Toshinori blinked up at him, taken aback by the civilian, or supremely parental, request. The boy looked embarrassed, but mostly tired. There was something about the deep set of his strangely colored eyes that made Shinzo look like he was gazing out from the opposite end of a long tunnel, distant and disappointed. And Toshinori answered before he even considered if he could actually be of help. Of course, my boy. Take a seat and let's see what we can figure out. Even as Shinzo kicked off his shoes and flopped down next to him, the older hero's grin calcified unpleasantly. Homework? What did he know about algebra and social studies and other high school necessities? The only thing that could make Toshinori panic more was a request for romantic advice, which he was incredibly certain would be forthcoming with young Midoriya someday soon, and he dreaded it every waking moment of his existence. Seated, Shinzo fumbled his bag off his shoulder and dumped it in front of them, half of the contents sloughing out. Everything was grubby at the edges, most papers bent in two and relentlessly dog-eared. Not a very organized soul. Probably what Aizawa would be, Toshinori thought with a wry spark of mirth, if he hadn't trimmed his life of any trinkets or other excess through sheer exhaustion. It was easy to see the parallels, even without what he knew of Aizawa's darkest days. So it was no wonder the child managed to get under his unofficial mentor's skin so easily. At that thought, Toshinori made a mental note to check in on Aizawa again, just in case. Because it was important, even if Aizawa didn't necessarily welcome it. Because Aizawa and his health were important. When Shinzo finally located, flattened out, and presented the homework in question, Toshinori breathed a silent sigh of relief. It was a worksheet of English, half-filled. He actually knew a fair amount, but he also wasn't about to interfere with the flow of the first year's learning process. The key was asking questions that made Shinzo think a little further whenever he was hitting a wall, addressing or circumventing any weaknesses in skill, which Toshinori was coming to realize was a grander part of teaching. Letting the students know what they didn't know, while reminding them of what they did. So the two prodded along on their little woven island on the green, lapsing into periods where Shinzo would scribble intently, his deep frown slowly easing. It was an hour before class, and Shinzo was on campus, yet he didn't have training, which made Toshinori wonder if he'd woken and wandered from nothing more than nerves. He knew the feeling. The boy was probably having a hard time keeping up with both Aizawa's expectations and the general studies course, and Toshinori tried not to consider how much of that was by design, to test his mettle, his want. Serious thoughts aside, Toshinori found himself chuckling as they worked through the assignment. It seemed Yamada-san taught general studies English as well as hero course English, and his translation examples were amusing, to say the least. Toshinori read along in the coursework with a faint smile, but that smile was quick to drop as the older hero read on and began to put some things together. "What is all this?" he asked, gesturing to the worksheet, particularly the stiffly inked cartoon animals arranged at the top of the page, which looked like they had been photocopied to death. "English?" the boy said, blinking up at him sleepily. "No, the little characters. The stories. It seems very involved." "Oh, you mean the animals. That's Grumpy Cat, Tall Bunny, Cool Bird, Sassy Wolf," Shinzo listed, pointing to each in turn and pronouncing their English names with only slight hesitation. Grumpy Cat, Sassy Wolf, and Cool Bird are best friends, even though they're really different. They all go on adventures together. Tall Bunny is new, and he's really shy, but he's okay. Other animals come by, too. Toshinori swallowed audibly. Grumpy Cat was little more than a pair of nastily narrowed eyes and a black-whiskered face, and, to his rising horror, had a crescent-shaped scar under its left eye. Sassy Wolf had dark, spiky fur, a saucy grin, and very distinctive red glasses. Cool Bird had flashy sunglasses and big headphones and looked to be screaming or yelling in glee. Tall Bunny had... Well, Tall Bunny was very tall and was carrying a frilly handkerchief. He didn't look well, even as bunnies went, and there was something about the forward droop of his long, wrinkled ears that made Toshinori very nervous. Yamada-sensei draws them all on the board, and we have to translate what they're saying to figure out the story. Whoever figures it out first or does the best impressions in class when it's time to read it aloud gets candy. Requesting that he continue to talk about it in English, to test him, Toshinori fairly sank into the ground, aghast, as Shinso continued to explain the general disaster that was his English class, halting every so often to parse verbs and tenses. It's a cool way to learn English vocabulary without reading textbooks. So Cool Bird is a music star, rock star, and sometimes bad things happen in his shows. Like, one time a storm blew away all his instruments and he cried for a long time. But then his friends sold cookies and used the money to buy him new stuff. Sometimes they fight over stuff, problems, but they're all friends and help each other out, no matter what happens. And Grumpy Cat? In English as well, please, Toshinori added, hurriedly, like he was a normal school employee asking after normal things. Grumpy Cat is my favorite. All he wants to do is sleep all the time, Shinso said with a cockeyed grin, looking over. He's mean but nice. I don't know the word in English. Tsundere, though, you know. Yamada-sensei always says he's no fun, no sir. We all say it like a chant. Like Cool Bird is too cool, ya dig? Shinso shrugged, staring down at the rumpled up paper, with his lip tucked between his teeth. I don't know. It's a fun class. Better than modern literature, anyway. Beside him, Toshinori buried his head in his hands and stifled a cough that threatened to rip him in two through sheer disbelief. Eerie and inappropriate similarities of his characters aside, Yamada might be ruining an entire generation of children through his constant need of verbal feedback, not to mention giving them wildly inappropriate expectations of interjections in English-speaking countries. Did he dole out candy so indiscriminately to the hero studies children as well? It would explain so much. But Grumpy Cat hasn't been around lately. He's sneaking off, and all the other animals are wondering... Toshinori corrected him stiffly, automatic. Or wonder, third person plural, if you're still speaking in the present. Present progressive, Shinso muttered after a moment of thought. All the animals are wondering where he is. Is that right? But Toshinori hardly heard him. Right or wrong, over the din of panic in his own head as his worst fears were confirmed. A diary. Yamada-san was basically keeping a diary and having his students translate it. Oh no! Oh no! No! Yamada-san! No! Toshinori's mind raced. Did Kamaya-san know about this? Did Kayama-san know about this? Did Aizawa? I think Grumpy Cat is dating someone and doesn't want anyone to know. Shinso continued in a mumble. Possibly so Toshinori wouldn't notice he had dropped out of speaking English. Or that's what Yamada-sensei keeps hinting at. We're allowed to submit story ideas, so that's what I'm going to put in the ask box next week. Toshinori hummed to show he heard, and allowed Shinso to return to the actual translation work for a moment, wondering how on earth to approach any of it. Or if he should. the dating bit he was ignoring with every fiber of his being. But he absolutely had to know if Yamada's antics were common knowledge among the staff. Have you ever shown your English homework to Aizawa-sensei? Was what he came up with, trying to sound curious instead of uncommonly terrified. No? Why? Shinzo asked, squinting. Just wondering. Since Aizawa-sensei is your mentor now, I'm, very flattered that you chose me to help you with it. It makes me feel special. Toshinori blurted out. Not entirely a lie. It meant something to have one of their young students seek him out and trust him when he looked like this. And it was a new feeling. Beside him, Shinzo grinned. Well, yeah. Only someone like you could put up with Aizawa-sensei like you do, he drawled, then tilted his head back as if trying to peek under the veteran hero's bangs, which he was determinedly hiding behind. So are you still okay helping me with this last page? You look kinda... No, 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 of course, Toshinori assured him, clearing his throat and sweeping his bangs back with a firm hand and a spare clip, as if dedicating himself to a perfectly ordinary tutoring session, with no more strangeness. Please, let's continue and see if, Tall Bunny will ever find his lost handkerchief. He should have known better than to hope for quiet and calm with this particular child. What's your quirk? Shinzo asked suddenly, when they were halfway through the back page, turning that blunt, searching gaze on him without an ounce of guile. Is it, like, how tall you are? Toshinori startled, and hard. He reflexively covered his mouth with a hand as his throat tightened harshly and his skin prickled, cold and caught and a little afraid. A flood of options and half-lies and anxieties momentarily incapacitated him, and he had to look away from Shinzo's unblinking gaze. He had to think how many versions of himself existed now. Yagi Toshinori, the secretary, Yagi Senpai and Yagi-san, Toshinori, All Might, Toshi, even. There was so much that this young man didn't know, that even Aizawa didn't know, and had to know one day as Midoriya's teacher. And he dreaded that reckoning with every bit of himself. Nervously plucking his bangs out of their clips, Toshinori tried to think up a fitting half-lie as he parsed the hall of mirrors that was his life. But the more he thought, the more there was a simple answer underneath it all. Honesty. As horribly hard as it was, honesty. Actually, Toshinori breathed out shakily, making himself smile. I don't have a quirk. Huh? Shinzo blinked hard, looking awake for the first time since they sat down. You don't? Toshinori shook his head. I was born quirkless. I don't think I know anyone who doesn't have a quirk. Shinzo's pale eyes scanned him, as if looking for a deficiency that he hadn't seen before. A missing limb, a gaping hole, hidden by clothing or assumptions. Toshinori felt the prying acutely, stinging like a brand on the scar swallowing his side. But more so, he felt the new tension in the young man, the sudden crushing concern. Were you... I was teased, Toshinori said with a nod. He tugged at his bangs, a fretful gesture so old it startled him momentarily. It brought back memories of starched school uniforms and the overwhelming smell of cleaner filling his empty classroom as the sun set and he stayed behind, pushing the mop. Back in my day, it wasn't so extraordinary to be quirkless, but I still had a hard time finding my place. I felt alone much of the time, left out or left behind. That sucks, Shinzo snorted, eyes stormy, like the boy was angry on his behalf, and bitterly so. Abruptly, Toshinori felt the familiar pull of that deep, dark well of unspoken suffering that so often laid the groundwork for the best among them. The knowledge of exclusion, pain, the sheer strength of the desire to protect others, knowing what was on the other side of a failure to do so, that nothing could quite imitate in terms of moral drive. It was that vital empathy which brought heroism from a profession of violence to a passionate calling of protection. A hero with a smile who transformed helplessness into hope. The heartbeat of one for all. It was that same brilliant, ever-questing something he had sensed in Midoriya that led him to entrust his legacy to the boy. But it left Toshinori wondering, why was pain so often a prerequisite for responsible heroism? It hurt his tired heart to know people this young were in such pain. It even made his hope in humans waver for just a moment, because suffering like this was not a villain's doing. Only people could hurt people like this, and yet only people could heal that hurt. It was hard, he agreed, hearing his own voice as if from a long way off. But I always had heroes to look up to. What were they like back then? Shinzo asked, and Toshinori glanced over, startled either by the question or the sheer couching of time. Pro heroes, I mean. I know things were different back then, with a lot of really bad villains, so what were they like? Like a hand raised to stop a howling storm. Toshinori briefly tried not to see her, but she came anyway. Dark hair, clever eyes, blinding smile. Her hot hand hard against his back, like she would never let him get knocked down, and her brazen laugh and sculpted arms above the flare of her dirty white gloves. It was almost like she wore white, an impractical and high-maintenance color, just to emphasize the brutal, hands-on nature of heroism. She was never spotless, never perfect, but she never stopped fighting, just like she taught him. Never. Toshinori's enormous hand, previously wandering around his twinging knee, came to rest on his heart. The beat underneath felt distant, but something familiar and sweet and yet far too faint still whispered in his bones. Taking a deep, shuddering breath, the aging hero reached down and pulled at the embers of One for All, out of nothing more than a dark curiosity, and clearly felt how weak the response was. How reluctant and spent. It was almost gone. Almost entirely gone. But he would remain after the last of the light had gone out of this poor vessel. Its duty done. As she would remain. But this time in Midoriya. They all would. To make him the greatest there had ever been. Yagi-san? Came Shinzo's voice. High and hesitant. Oh, sorry. Yes, heroes. Heart beating wildly in his dented chest, Toshinori ducked his head and cleared his throat, dragging himself away from the gray space he knew stretched out ahead of him. His end foretold. I guess heroes were much like today, I think, with names and costumes, even though it wasn't quite such a business back then, he said quietly, chewing at his lip, thinking. Then he smiled a little. Because as long as Yagi-san, the quirkless civilian, was being honest. I even got to meet one. My favorite hero of all time. Oh yeah? Shinzo prompted, rustling around on the mat and rearranging his legs crisscross style, like it was story time. And perhaps it was. Yes, I was walking, on the way to school. I was young, a little younger than you, and it was almost summer, Toshinori recounted quietly. Part of him phasing back to that sunny day with a technicolor effortlessness that should have frightened him. The memory was so clear. He saw the flop of his shoelaces, the cracks in the sidewalk, and felt the close, sweaty weight of his backpack pulling at his shoulders. Heard the drone of the multitudinous TV screens in the department store window, expanding on the latest wave of crime to hit the city, sowing panic and fear. Felt the same frustration and veiled, selfish helplessness he always did, hearing about the kinds of suffering inflicted by villains, and knowing he could do nothing, less than nothing, to stop it. Maybe become a police officer, but that was it. His future was bleak and monotonous as the concrete beneath his sneakers, so he walked on. Then, the sudden, ear-splitting blare of a horn and a shower of sparks. There was a bus. And something must have happened. Something with the brakes. It was going very fast, and there was a man caught in the road. I looked up and saw it, and I was right there, so I jumped. You jumped? You're quirkless. It wasn't like that, He laughed at the accusation in the boy's voice. I saw it happening, and my body moved before I had a chance to think. So I pushed him out of the way. And then what happened? The answer was simple. Her. As if through a blurry lens, Toshinori remembered the screech of tires and someone screaming far away. The staggering impact of his shoulder against the man's chest seemed to blank everything else out. His numb fingers wrenched into the scratchy suit jacket as they flew, a weightless tangle of limbs silhouetted in the flash of the sun, bouncing off the side of the bus. He couldn't breathe, couldn't think, but simply braced for the impact as best he could, which wouldn't be enough. When it came, it wasn't an obliterating crash of metal and glass, but white leather gloves and a shout and an impossible acceleration. It was her. Her, stumbling to a halt with her strong arms clutching them both effortlessly. Her, sending the poor businessman off with a wave and rounding on him with a brusque whip of her cape, where he knelt on the chilly alleyway concrete, coughing and spitting and shaking from shock. She was furious. She didn't have to be, but she was, because that's who she was, because she wanted him to be safe, wanted everyone to be safe. Geez, kiddo, you could have been toast. What were you thinking, jumping like that? I'm sorry. His hands shaking at his sides, his eyes wide, pulling in breath after breath as his skin burned cold, realizing I wasn't. It was her, and the way she looked at him that day, the first day of the rest of his life. Wow, Shinzo said beside him, heavy and overwhelmed and pulling Toshinori gently back into the present, to green grass and rising sun. Then the boy glared up at him. That was stupid of you. You're lucky she was there. Yes, I was, he agreed, coughing slightly and taking a moment to clear his throat. I was very lucky. But that's why she was my favorite, you see, because she was around like that. She wasn't very well known at the time. And to me, being a hero was never about doing flashy things or conquering villains. Of course, that comes with the territory, but a hero's job is to make life safer, both by conquering the bad and by encouraging the things that make a society truly good. We talk about that sometimes, in civics, but I never really got it. How are you supposed to do both of those things at the same time? Shinzo asked, cheek pillowed on his hand. In front of him, his worksheet lay completely forgotten, but Toshinori saw the opportunity for a greater kind of education in that moment, and his stapled, rewired gut only jumped once at the burden of explaining such an important thing to such a vulnerable pupil. He was no teacher, but his lived experience had to count for something, surely. Sooner or later, he would be little more than stories, so he should get used to sharing them. So others could learn. Part of being a hero is inspiring hope and easing suffering, he began, clearing his throat. He chose his words as carefully as he could, with his heart pounding the way it was, with this wide-eyed child looking to him for some snippet of truth. Why Shinzo should keep fighting for others, and how, while having no idea who he was actually talking to. For the first time, the anonymity lent Toshinori a kind of comfort. I think of it that way, anyway, because cowardly behaviors like bullying can't survive in a truly heroic society, where everyone knows their own power. True heroes give hope that even the weakest among us still have worth and deserve to be protected, because they are human. It's what it means to be a symbol of peace, because true peace is not only the quiet of safety, but harmony and growth, understanding, equality and empathy, and the realization that a blow to one of us is a blow to all of us. Like All Might. Toshinori glanced over, trying not to let the sunburst of panic show on his gaunt face. Shinzo just blinked up at him, a little confused. You said symbol of peace. That's what they used to call him, right? Because things were really bad before he showed up, and then he fixed it. Shinzo grinned. He's the coolest. Toshinori had to close his eyes, something aching. Actually, it was hard to find something in him that didn't ache at that moment. All heroes are symbols of peace, ideally. Heroes bring out the best in people and show that true strength isn't really defeating evil, but resisting fear and championing those things that make society wonderful. Because if we live well and take care of each other, there maybe won't be any reasons to turn to villainy. The silence of the green was impenetrable as the wall around UA, erasing the chaos and poverty and crime that so many pro-heroes didn't understand, even as they knocked down victims of it every day. The shadow of All for One still haunted the world, and Shigaraki was a troubling call to action for those among with dark intentions. But true villainy was rare in this day and age when compared to circumstantial violence or anger gone unchecked and unhealed. The lauded pro-hero industry didn't exist in a bubble, and in a way, it made Toshinori hope for a future without so many heroes. A world without UA. But as they sat, the world outside began to filter through. Cars rolled across the wet pavement, and students of all shapes and sizes and colors clamored out and strode towards those shining halls, bringing with them everything, good and bad, that they had learned from the world they had dedicated themselves to saving. Now, today, Toshinori knew that Uraraka's family struggled with money. He knew that Midoriya's ever-striving heart labored under the weight of a lifetime of bullying and flinching and constant fear for something he could never help, much as he had. He knew that the Todorokis were not the model family everyone believed, and there was a haunting wariness in young Shoto's eyes that could not be explained away by strictness alone. He knew there was a horrible reason why the staid boy reacted so quickly to sharp movements, to physical closeness, and why it was always to pull away. Toshinori knew these things in the same breath he knew those same children who had suffered them possessed unimaginable strength, heart, and would not tolerate that suffering in others. Now, today, he believed they could make a world without that kind of pain, or at least begin the process. He believed in them without hesitation, in every way, and would gladly give the rest of himself to help them realize their own power, because the world was theirs now. And, thinking that, Toshinori felt safer than he had in a long time. "Anyway, that's what I think," he said, hiding his face behind his hair with one hand to his neck, perhaps to hide the tremble of it. Beside him, Shinzo turned his face to the clearing sky, where brilliant swaths of blue were beginning to break through the warm morning haze. "Maybe that's why All Might smiles all the time," he said after a moment. "Even when he's beating the bad guys, I mean. Because he's trying to be good, even when he's technically hurting people. Which you shouldn't really do if you can help it." "Maybe that's why," Toshinori said softly, over the catch in his throat. His eyes stung, and before he knew it, he felt a tear slipping down his long nose. He moved to wipe it away, ducking instinctively as he did so, then noticed Shinzo watching him intently, learning and patterning, intently. And Toshinori had to think. Were tears something to be hidden in this day and age? He thought perhaps Aizawa would be ashamed of him. So he smiled thinly and made himself put his hands in his lap, sniffling briefly. "That must have been really cool for you, to meet your favorite hero, Yagi-san. Important, I mean," Shinzo mumbled when the silence trailed on, with no explanation for his tears. Toshinori's tired heart throbbed sharply, seeing the young hero watch him with worry written in every bit of his round face. He had a good spirit, this one. "Well, it's not every day you get to meet a real hero," was all Toshinori could say, a grin cracking his face almost painfully, how she taught him. "Well, now you get to work around them every day," Shinzo said bracingly, gesturing to the pristine chrome landscape of the campus around them. "At UA. Pretty cool, right?" All at once, Toshinori was rushed with the sense memory of entering UA for the very first time, overwhelmed by the completeness and hopeful sense of belonging, and he had to close his eyes, It was triumph and it was pain to pass through those gates with his gray pressed jacket hanging over his shoulder, unable to move at anything less than a jog for his excitement and need. To be past the bloody gauntlet of the entrance exam and surrounded by the greatest heroes of the generation. And yet, she wasn't there. She never would be, except as a whisper in his bones. God, but he missed her. I'll shut up now, Shinso whispered beside him, distant and doleful. No, no, Toshinori choked out, putting out a hand, but stopping before patting the boy, instead fretting uselessly at the air. He cringed, swallowed, suddenly feeling like little more than a tangle of limbs and half-told stories. Mistakes, even, and far too battered to make any kind of sense. Please, my boy, you haven't done anything wrong, I promise, it's fine. You don't look fine. It was probably true. Toshinori didn't know what to say to that, until he took a breath, a moment, and thought about what Aizawa would say. It got a little easier, and the words came slowly but surely. I think it's okay to not be fine. I've worked around heroes enough to know that the ability to feel is perhaps tantamount to heroism. The ability to feel and empathize, that is, because we see so much pain, it's tempting to close ourselves off. Toshinori shook his head, smiling to cover the waver in his voice. But I believe we lose the good if we ignore the bad, because it will always be that feeling, that genuine desire to help those in pain, that will carry you when your body no longer can. And that's what plus ultra means to me, to go beyond, because of the strength of what you feel. I guess I thought heroes were supposed to be happy all the time, Shinso said after a moment, hiding in his crossed arms. That's what it seemed like, anyway. We need heroes who can smile, it's true, Toshinori said with a sigh, nodding, realizing, perhaps for the first time, how much he had changed since meeting Aizawa, and how it felt to speak a new truth. It was the kind of truth, and the kind of world he wanted for future heroes, rather than what he had needed to be for the world for so long. You needn't smile all the time to be a hero, my boy, but enough. Enough to remind us what we're fighting for. That way, you'll bring us hope, but be able to take care of yourself as well. And that was what he wanted. For Shinso, for Deku, for Uraraka and Todoroki, for everyone under his care, and maybe, perhaps, for himself. Toshinori only realized he was holding his body so stiffly, hunched over his knees as if bowed by the weight of the difficult conversation, when he straightened and wiped at his face, and a chorus of twinges erupted from his bent back, making him wince sharply. So much for stretching this morning. Wrangling his long limbs over and above the abrupt wave of exhaustion that flooded him in the quiet, Toshinori turned to reassure the boy once again, but found Shinso grinning up at him, showing all of his teeth in a ridiculous sort of gleeful grimace. Startled, Toshinori laughed so hard his shoulders shook, tremendous and loud and cleansing. Oh my! Yes, very good! That will make a great front page one day, my boy! He reached over to ruffle Shinso's lavender tangle of hair, finding himself mirroring that grin when his charge snorted and snickered and wrestled away from his hand. Then, abruptly, Shinso pouted, scrubbing at his pink nose with a thick sniff. A bit too late, Toshinori realized the boy was a little pale and a little flushed in all the wrong places, and hot to the touch. Aizawa-sensei says I'm not allowed on magazines, because of how my quirk works, Shinso said heavily, then raised his hands to quote in the air, grumbling in clear imitation of a certain grumpy cat.
Absolute anonymity is your greatest advantage. If you ever lose it, you're a smear on the sidewalk, kid.
Toshinori felt his face fall and he bit his tongue, not knowing what to say. Not knowing how much of the boy's desire to become a hero hinged on being known and seen and adored, or simply accepted, considering the problematic bent of his quirk. But he was saved from any backpedaling by Shinso sneezing suddenly, then grinning and squinting up at him again. But if that's the way I can help people the most, then I guess it's okay. Because I just want to be a hero, and there's a lot of ways you can do that, you know?
I do, Toshinori assured him, with as much feeling as he could muster. Deep voice suddenly patchy from the melting sensation in his chest. He reached out and, far more softly, tousled the boy's hair. And if that's true, I think your heart is that of a hero, no matter who knows your face.
Thanks, Yagi-san. I think you're really smart for not being a teacher, he said brightly. Toshinori was about to thank him, maybe demure, but Shinso took that moment to haphazardly scrub his nose with his arm and announce in adamant tones, I think you're way too good for Aizawa-sensei.
What? Excuse me now, young man, Toshinori choked out, clapping a hand over his mouth as hot blood rocketed to the cusp of his throat.
Yep. Anyway, thanks for the help, Yagi-san. Now I can turn my paper in instead of working on it in first period.
Shinso leapt up and snagged his backpack with a hand, ducking into the same arm for a series of quick sneezes, and then raised a hand and flashed him a watery-eyed grin.
I gotta get to class. Bye.
Wait, hold up a minute, Shinso, my boy. Are you getting sick?
It was too late on every front. Shinso was gone, loping across the grass towards the General Studies building and leaving Toshinori's mouth hanging open. At length, the hero put his face in his hand and forced himself to take a deep, deep breath. Then another. This boy, this fearless, difficult, absurd, and wonderful boy. If Toshinori wasn't grateful for Midoriya's compulsive politeness before, he certainly was now. He breathed out, whistling a bit. And this was just one prolonged conversation with him? Aizawa was braver than he knew. And certainly good enough for anyone, Toshinori thought, before he could stop himself, the sudden heat in his face chasing him up and across campus, just before the first bell.